police photographing our license plate.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. And my guest today is Mike Hickox. That's H-I-C-K-C-O-X. Mike is with the Society of St. Andrew. And hello, Mike. How are you? And tell us about yourself.
I'm fine. I have been the communication director here at Society of St. Andrew for just about 4 years. I am still relatively new to Virginia. We were in Nashville for 4 years before that, and then in New Hampshire for about 24 years before that. So the area is new to me, but Society of St. Andrew is not new to me. I had known of it in my previous jobs in previous places. So I did have some familiarity. I have much more familiarity now.
Okay, that sums it up, I guess. You know, I have to plead a little guilt here. I knew of the Society of St. Andrew, but sort of only on the fringe, my peripheral vision, if you will. Apologies. But a couple of weeks ago, I think, I did a radio news show or news story, and it featured gleaning. And I'm going, gleaning? I know what gleaning is. I learned that somewhere, Sunday school or something. And there was a minister who it was soundbite involved. I can't remember his name, but he started out with gleaning is something that started with the Old Testament. And immediately I'm going, aha, I do know about this. And I was just so fascinated that I began to look for you guys and find you. And then that led to this invitation and this conversation. So tell us about gleaning, first of all, historically.
We did a little bit of research a while ago about our name, which is not the clearest name, Society of St. Andrew, to let you know what it is that we do. So we looked at the word gleaning to see how much that helps. And when we sent out a survey on it, several people sent back a note to us and said, you misspelled cleaning.
So
at that point, we knew we had work to do.
Yes.
Gleaning, there's an assumption that people who are active in the church may be more familiar with it than people who are not. And unfortunately, that's not necessarily true either. But there is reference to it in Old Testament in several places because gleaning was something that was done in Old Testament times, and it did make it into the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was around before that because as long as farmers have grown crops and had a way of leaving some extra at the edges and around the corners for the poor and the traveler and the widow, probably as long as farmers have been staying in one place and growing crops and caring about people, this has existed.
Yes.
Where farmers will intentionally make sure that some of what they have goes to people who need it most. And that's exactly what it is still today. It's when farmers say, I'm earning a living by working hard as a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there is some surplus, there is some leftover, there are edges of the fields, there are places where there's still some very good top-notch food, and there are people who are hungry and could use it. I want to make it happen.
Yes.
So that's what gleaning is all about. It's really going it through after the harvest is done and picking the remaining good crop that's coming ripe. So it's one hand, it's surplus. Another hand, it could be waste. Or the third way to look at it, it's great food.
Yes. You know, when you describe it that way, too, I'm remembering as a kid following my grandmama along in what she called her garden, but it really was It was huge, and tomatoes and, you know, and fruits and all that anyway. But she, I hadn't thought about that, but they used to pile up, you know, it's like I had 13 uncles or something, and they would pile up stuff at the end of the row. And I know I asked about it. I don't remember asking, but I'm sure I did, because that's kind of kid I still am. But I remember the answer, and the answer was something like, that's for the other folks, or something like that. And I hadn't a clue what that meant, but it disappeared. And sometimes they even put stuff in baskets at the end. But anyway, but on to the Society of St. Andrew, and you guys are now everywhere. You're all over the country. Tell me about, the extent of the work. What do you have, 40,000 volunteers each year to come out to help with this?
Yes. And that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Let me back up a little bit and say that we started small, but it was apparently a very good idea, and it caught on. We started out in 1979. There were a couple of ministers in Virginia who, with their families, were interested in how people live in concert with the land. They were concerned about people who are hungry. They decided they would learn more about it and try to tell people more about those who are hungry and how you could help. So they'd gone to their bishop. They were the United Methodist. They'd gone to the bishop and said, this is the ministry we want to do. And they were granted the ability not to serve a church, but to work on this ministry for a while and receive one minimum salary between the two of them. Hmm. They tried to figure out how to do this. So they bought a little farmhouse in Big Island, Virginia, which is in the foothills of the Appalachians. Yeah. It sounds like it's a beautiful place on the coast. It's not. It's a beautiful place in the mountains instead. And there was a little sheep farm there. Hmm. So they made a living off the sheep farm, and they would go around all over the state of Virginia and talk about hungry people and how you might be helpful. Uh-huh. And then 4 years into this process, they're out on the Eastern Shore, and they gave a talk at a church someplace. There were some farmers in the audience, and one of the farmers stood up at the end and he said, okay, I've finished harvesting for the year, and now I'm just going to plow up everything that's left and start preparing for next year. There's probably 100,000 pounds of good potatoes out there.
Wow.
And you're telling me there's a lot of hungry people. Do you have any way of getting these potatoes to those people?
Yeah.
And these two pastors going around doing education said, yes. And then they start to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So they go to the food bank in Lynchburg and say, look, if we had a lot of free good potatoes, how many could you distribute in a week? And at that time, they said probably 50 pounds a week.
Hmm.
Okay, great. They have 100,000 pounds out on the Eastern Shore. How do they put that together?
Yeah.
So they very quickly started this process of checking with food banks and food pantries all around the area and figuring out some way to distribute this food to people who could use it. They spent a week on that, called back the farmer and said, we have it figured out. We can use all those potatoes. And he said, good, because I have six friends out here, and they all have 100,000 pounds.
Oh, my heavens. Wow.
So that was the start of it. It was a farmer going, okay, why don't you do something about what you're talking about? Can you do that? And them saying, sure we can.
Yes.
So that's how it started, and it was just a matter of what we still do is we don't do much at Society of St. Andrew. We tie things together.
Gotcha.
It's all the farmers who are willing to let people into their fields or have large surplus they're willing to let go of. And it's volunteers who are willing to put in their own time, and it's the food banks and food pantries that already exist. And we put everything together, and voila, people get fed. So that's what the deal is. So it started out with just a couple of people in a small place.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are farmers everywhere.
Exactly.
Around this country, except in the deserts. Everywhere else we have farmers and volunteers and hungry people.
Well,
so it just keeps spreading.
It sounds like you are the master of one of my favorite things, and that is connecting the dots. If we just see, you know, it's the old finding who needs what and how do we make that trail and connect those dots, and you guys have nailed it because you saw the problem and found the source of a solution and the way to make it happen, the venue to carry it forward and transport. That's the word
I'm looking for, and then the volunteers to put it together. It's just, it's an amazing story, Mike. It really is, and moving as well. So where are you now after the two ministers and the little sheep farm? You how much food a year do you move?
Well, first of all, starting out with taking one answer for where you are, is that 35 years after that started, we are across the street from where it started. Somebody put up a tin building for us on the property across the road, so we're across from the sheep shed where they started out.
Oh, wow.
Well, so we're still on a gravel road in Big Island. That's where the national headquarters is.
Uh-huh.
But so out of here, we have a gleaning coordinator for the state of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Sarah Ramey, and she's in this building when she's in. A lot of times she's out running around. But she also has about 7 or 8 area gleaning coordinators around the state of Virginia. They coordinate the on-the-ground gleaning that happens in their various parts of the state. We've expanded during that time so that we also have an office in North Carolina, which does North Carolina and South Carolina areas. They have gleaning coordinators. We have an office in Florida, in Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee.
Wow.
And an office is actually two people in a room that is donated by a church someplace.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a room and a place to operate out of. And naturally, all the work actually happens outside. The office is just a coordinating point again. But that gives us places to focus the work and be closer to where the work is being done. And then we have some people who are in other states, a number of other states, are just operating on their own out of their own house.
Hmm.
So again, connecting those dots.
Sure.
Where they are coordinating, they don't need physical space to work with. Because we don't have the potatoes going through our office. They just go straight from the field to the food bank or the food pantry.
Excellent.
Sometimes people ask us up here on these little tiny mountain roads how we get all the tractor trailers in and out. And fortunately, we don't have to.
Exactly. Wow. So, well, then what happens then when the volunteers pick the potatoes and the fruit and glean the potatoes and the fruit and the product and the produce, etc.? How does it exactly get to the food banks?
Okay, now this depends on what we're talking about, because I'll just throw in a factor here. We have three programs that we operate. One is the gleaning network,
yes,
which is where we are now.
Yes.
The second one is what started out being called the Potato Project, and now is Potato and Produce Project, which is large loads.
Yes.
And
yes.
The third is Harvest of Hope, which is camps.
Yeah.
But in the gleaning, it's very localized because, for instance, a farmer with a field of corn. Now, interesting thing happens with corn sometimes. Some supermarket chain will have a contract with that farmer to buy corn. Sometimes it's even just the top ear on the stalk, the prime ear.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've sold is that top ear, and then once they've gone through the field and picked that, the rest of it is waste.
Wow.
Although it's perfectly good corn.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll have people going through, they'll pay people to go through and pick corn, and once they've done that a couple of times, it's not financially worthwhile to pay people to go through and do the entire fields again, but there's still good corn ripening.
Mm.
They'll call us. They'll call their area gleaning coordinator and say, okay, I've been through this field. The rest of it is yours. Arrange to have your volunteers come.
Mm.
The gleaning coordinator has groups of volunteers. Some of them are individuals that have said, I want to do this. Some are families that want to do it. We also have church groups and school groups and civic organizations, any other kind of group that comes together, including synagogues and mosques and groups of people who want to help feed people.
Yes.
And so the coordinator has that list, the email list, telephone list, and it's usually short notice. The farmer will say, okay, on this Saturday, at the time you can go through. So they'll contact people, and they all show up at 8 o'clock in the morning at the edge of the field.
Mm-hmm.
The farmer says, that's the area you go through. They go through, and they'll load up. 2-3 hours they'll spend loading up, usually pickup trucks, sometimes wagons, whatever there is. Because in these gleanings that are local, they have food pantries and food banks all around that area within a few miles. And they'll pick, and then they go straight to the food banks, drop all the food off, and they're done.
Wow.
So that's what a day of typical gleaning looks like. It takes a gleaner probably about 3 to 4 hours.
Oh.
And they'll get thousands of pounds of corn distributed, and that's being given out to people, needy people that day. And that could be corn or peaches or green beans or cabbage or many other things, whatever the food crops are that grow, but we don't do wheat.
Now, yes, I know now this may seem like a silly or even facetious question, but I mean it sincerely. And I know it's not exactly on your end of things because you are gleaning it and delivering it to the food bank, but I'm just wondering, is there an increase in demand and need for the food that you provide? That's the question. But before I let you answer that question, Mike, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm talking to Mike Hickox, H-I-C-K-C-O-X, of the Society of St. Andrew. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Some films stand apart, individualist and defiant. Like its subject, American Splendor is such a film. It's the story of Harvey Pekar, the snarling everyman who found a certain fame when he produced what was essentially an underground comic chronicle of his own life. It was enough to get him booked as a regular on the David Letterman show, until his unfiltered honesty got him unceremoniously fired for his attack on the network. It is said that Letterman whispered to him during a commercial, "You just blew a good thing, Harvey." Clearly, Harvey blew a lot of good things through his pervasive pessimism and his caustic wit. He did not sugarcoat his observations, and this was the key to his success. We know life can be hard, and when it is hard, it can bring us down. Harvey Pekar let us know it isn't just us. This fresh little film combines comic book images, on-screen appearances of the real-life characters interspersed with the actors playing them, narration by Harvey Pekar himself, and real event footage, including the Letterman Show. It has the strength of a documentary in which we are enriched by experiencing a unique perspective, one hopefully not our own. American Splendor is an experiment that worked. Independent film, where the real stories are told. You can find us at IndieFilmMinute.com.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio for our second segment with Mike Hickox. I'd asked you, given the economic times now, even though you're really on the gathering the product and getting it where it needs to be for others to food banks to distribute it, are you hearing or noticing a greater demand? Because the economy, you know, people talk about the middle class a great deal, but they don't talk about the poorer class so much, nor do they talk about that with the hard-hit economy since 2007, 2008, 2009, everyone thinks the recession is over. I'm not so sure. But with that, are those people who need food and other staples, has that not increased? And therefore, maybe, well, how does that affect you at your end of the process?
What we understand from the food banks is they have not have had a big drop in need. There continues to be great need for food, people who have trouble affording good food.
Yes.
And I'll send in a little parenthetical comment here, too. It's people who do not have much money to buy food, the least that they can afford is good food like fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
That good stuff's expensive. So distributing good fruits and vegetables to food banks helps out with that a lot. The numbers fluctuate all over the place, and they really do fluctuate, but the number of people in the country who are without, at least at some point every month, without the food that they need, it could be 40 million Americans, 50 million Americans, and at some point for me, it's not a matter of counting the number of people specifically. You just know that the number is more than you can take care of.
Yes.
At any one time. So any effort we put into it, we know is helping some people.
Exactly.
We wish we could help them all. But what we have been able to supply, and the numbers here are impressively big.
Yes.
Is that this year, so far, we have supplied about 15 million pounds of fresh fruits and vegetables through our programs.
Wow.
15 million pounds last year, and we'll probably get close to this by the time the year is over. It was 32 million pounds.
Wow.
So that is an awful lot of good food, but it's spread across most of the states of the United States.
Uh-huh.
And when you spread it that thin, it's a little bit here and a little bit there. So we figured it's probably about 3 servings per pound. That's 100 million servings of fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. and we have to feel good about that.
Oh, yes.
But the fact is, the amount of food that's wasted in the United States, the USDA has come up with numbers of 96 billion pounds. More mm-hmm. recently, they're playing with 133 billion pounds of food wasted. That's the amount of food that gets wasted after it gets delivered someplace.
Yes.
to restaurants, homes, and supermarkets. They can't even count the amount of food that's wasted in the field and wasted in the distribution process. There is more food wasted every year than would be needed to feed everybody what they need. It's not a matter of us not producing enough food. It's just that so much of it just doesn't get where it needs to go. So what we do is significant. No one else does as much food distribution of gleaned food as we do. There are a lot of smaller places, and that all adds up too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of us doing our part, and it makes a difference.
Yes.
It does. It makes a big difference. But as you started out with, the need is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And with the disparity between those who are most wealthy and those who are not growing, middle class, a lot of people in middle class are on a tenuous edge.
Yes.
They're still in middle class until the paychecks stop coming.
Mm-hmm.
Until something drastic happens in the family and one of the earners dies, or something else happens to them and half the pay is gone, suddenly they're at a food bank looking for help.
Yes.
So, well, the need is still there.
Yes, that was the point I was making. I think people, not that they should need this to be willing to volunteer or to give or share or whatever, but this image of that we've had traditionally of who poor people are needs an update to the 21st century, because post, again, 2007, 2008, people who need some kind of assistance, the numbers are increasing. As you say, you can have an executive who has a great job until he doesn't have that job anymore, and then, they're challenging times. But fortunately, there are organizations like the Society of St. Andrew, and I guess we should mention, too, that to get more information about this, you visit endhunger.org. What are we going to find on that website, Mike? More information about what you're doing and how to be a part of it?
Yes, thank you for mentioning the website. It's these days such a key communication tool. We have discovered that people who go to endhunger.org go for a couple of different reasons. One is the people who want to know more about gleaning and maybe how they can get involved.
Uh-huh.
The other big driver to the website, interestingly, is people who are interested in food waste in the United States. I think probably of people who go to search engines and find us, that's the largest number, is trying to find out more about food waste, because there are a lot of news stories in the last couple of years about food waste, and then that translates, if you move a little bit, into what can we do about it.
Yes.
And maybe there's a good food that could feed people. So that brings a lot of people to the website, and there is information about that on our website and a lot of links to other places where you can learn more. So it's a good central point to go and start and find the information that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
The other is people who are interested in volunteering. Once you get there, you can easily find a button for taking you to a volunteer page, which actually is a map of the country.
Mm.
And then you pick your state.
Yeah.
Click on the state, because there are many states where we have gleaning coordinators working. If you're in one of those states, you might live in a place where we have active fields you can go out and work in. there are other states where we are doing mostly transportation of food into that state. Mm. And we don't have people who are actively gleaning there. But if you're interested in doing it in one of those states, we're interested in giving you the information
sure.
on how to do it.
Sure.
We have enough experience
yes.
with this to give you gleaning guides and information on how to set it up and what you need for a person in the field in charge of that and relating to the farmers and tax laws in various places, because farmers will get tax breaks on their donations, which vary by state.
Mm-hmm.
There are some federal advantages and in some places state advantages. But if you have any interest in volunteering, or you just want more information about the whole process, or if you want to donate, of course, we would take that.
Yeah,
endhunger.org.
I was going to say, what about farmers and people who have the food, who are, whether again you call it surplus or wasted, are looking for a way to get your volunteers to their farm or orchard and collect and glean the surplus to go to the food bank? Can they reach you also through endhunger.org? And what sort of percentage have you been getting of the actual farmer?
We love to hear from farmers, and no matter what category you're in terms of wanting to get involved, on our website, there one of the menu items is Get Involved.
Uh-huh.
And under that, for instance, one of the choices is farmers, and then farmers can find out who to contact, again, divided up by the state you're in, who to talk to about that. We get a percentage of farmers? I don't know. There are so many farmers, but there are thousands of farms, and most farmers don't know about us in particular,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of them, when they do find out about us, are very interested. We have, for instance, in Virginia, good relationship with the Department of Agriculture.
Uh-huh.
And we had a gleaning a couple of weeks ago, which is an annual thing now. So this is the third annual day of gleaning,
yes.
which is a day where primarily it is designed to focus on that relationship of the farms and the farmers and the volunteers mm. and us and the food banks. And we had the Secretary of Agriculture out for the second year.
Oh, excellent.
Getting down in the dirt and picking
yeah.
peppers.
Yeah.
So the Department of Agriculture here in Virginia is doing a pretty good job letting the farmers know about us. We just had the Apple Association of the United States asking for an article from us so that more of the apple orchards would know about the kind of work they could do with us. We just had a visit to the apple orchards in Washington State, which is mm. part of that state is covered with apple trees.
Yes, yes.
And there are some small groups that are gleaning there, and a couple of the orchards were interested in working with us. So I don't know about percentages, but more and more farmers are finding out about us and calling us.
Fantastic.
And that is always a good part of the equation.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I know earlier you mentioned you have three programs. We've been talking primarily about the gleaning network, but you said Potato and Produce Project and what was it, Harvest of Hope?
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about those two.
Potato and Produce Project is really what started in 1983 when that farmer, the potato farmer, said, I have potatoes. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Because he had 2.5 tractor trailer loads.
Wow.
At that time. And that's when we had to start looking at large loads.
Hmm.
So we've looked at large loads ever since, and usually the large load is a full tractor trailer, and that's somewhere between 40 and 45,000 pounds of a product. We're working with farmers that have warehouses usually full of food. Sometimes it's fresh, or sometimes it's for instance, potatoes that have been put up in a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And they say, now we have a lot of surplus. This happens many years with sweet potatoes. This is not one of those years.
Uh-huh.
Because last year was a good surplus year, so they planted less, and an awful lot of those sweet potatoes that don't necessarily look fantastic sure are fantastic mm. for a lot of purposes, including dog food.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had no problem selling the sweet potatoes this year,
mm-hmm.
up to about what their supply was. They could sell even more if they had them. But what happens is there is surplus someplace in large numbers, and they call us and say, we can give you one or more tractor trailer loads if you have a place to send them. Fortunately, we have a lot of large food banks as part of our connection that can take these. So we have a woman here in the building who was actually one of the originators of this organization back in 1979 who is still working the large loads.
Oh, wow.
And she has sent, I think, about 150 truckloads so far this year.
My goodness.
And that comes out to, let's see, what is she up to? Last year she did about 10 million pounds.
Wow.
So this goes to, well, for instance, City Harvest in New York City. We send an awful lot of potatoes and other truckloads into New York City. We send to Indian reservations in South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
And most states get some of our large loads during the year. A couple of years ago, all of a sudden, we got a call from a grower in North Carolina who said, I have 6 million pounds of sweet potatoes.
Oh, my God.
You can distribute if you can do it real fast.
Wow.
I need to get them out of here. So it was the typical choice of, does this food go to people, hungry people who can eat it? Or does it go to a landfill?
Yeah, exactly.
Those are your two choices.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a better choice there.
Yeah. You know, go ahead.
We managed to get about 3.5 million pounds distributed to food banks in a couple of weeks.
That's really so impressive, Mike. I was going to ask you actually about New York City, because there are a lot of cities. You know, when as you say, the farmer is close to the food bank, it's an easier task. But when it's a city like New York City, as an extreme example, but Detroit and other cities, and where we have these areas, and I'm forgetting the name, but they call them, for lack of a better term, I can't, is it fast food locked or something? Because the neighborhoods actually don't have markets there that sell
fresh food deserts.
Yes, thank you. Are you able to get to places like that ever?
We do send food into, there's two things. One is straight into food banks that operate in cities. We
Excellent.
Do quite a bit of this in Washington, D.C. also.
Yes.
And the other is, we supply Feeding America. There's the large system, and some other fairly large ones that have their own distribution networks. So they can take a 40,000 pound truckload of potatoes the first day, and then the second day they're distributing that all over their region, including those food banks that are in the cities.
Wonderful.
Which gets it at least to the food banks that exist there.
Excellent.
And closer to the food deserts, and hopefully into places where people in the city can pick up some of that fresh food.
Yes.
So that's the effort.
Excellent. Wow. And Harvest of Hope, give us a little about that.
Harvest of Hope is a camp that we don't run, we don't have property. It's run in other camps in various places. We also don't even own a truck. So there's a lot of things we don't own. But most of the money we spend goes into the distribution process of getting food from point A to point B.
Yes.
And most of that is in the large loads. But the camps we hold are in various places. We have them in Florida, spring break in Florida, college students. In the summer, we have high school camps and middle school camps, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas. And then in the fall, we have some intergenerational ones, and we have them coming up in Virginia and Georgia. And these are either weekend or week-long programs, which are held for purposes of partly education, especially with the young people.
Yes.
Education about hunger in America, to demonstrate the need and the fact that a lot of that need you can't even see normally.
Yes.
Where you are, you're not noticing it.
Yes.
But there's a lot of hungry people. And to demonstrate that there is something that you can do about it.
Yeah.
So in the camps, they're doing a lot of education, and then they go out in the fields and work the fields. And a third component of that is, in most of these, we have access into a distribution point. So then the young people are brought to a food pantry, soup kitchen, someplace where they're doing the work and participate in getting that work done. So they go from learning about this to doing something about it.
Excellent.
And then the concept is, now you take it home, because they come from all over most of the eastern half of the country to come to these camps. Now you take it home and see if you can do something about it there.
Excellent. All right. So, wow. So it's through this education, you're cloning, so to speak, the Society of St. Andrew, which gets it out there in places that, as you say, you can't reach everybody, but you can certainly reach more with this rippling effect of Harvest of Hope camps. I'm wondering, and I don't mean this to be at all pessimistic about our future. I'm not. I'm quite optimistic. But I'm asked a lot about this, especially by young people, college-age students, that, you know, what's going to happen to us? We get our degree and we know can't get a job or whatever. And I hear what you're doing. And of course, remember my grandmama and the wagon and all that, and the harvesting. I often say, you know, if we are over consumers, we consume too much and waste too much. And that's not just food, that's electric power and, you know, air conditioning, all of it, gasoline. And I just wonder if nature and the world and humanity are not saying it's time to start, if we start thinking about each other. What you are doing is what people used to always do. And that is, I mean, I remember now, I mean, you've reminded me of so much stuff that I've long since forgotten. But I remember my grandfather back in those days, you know, some young couple in the family or friends get married, they don't have much money. He'd give them a few acres here, you know, and it's farmland, and go work it. It's yours. And I also, now not everybody can do that, but I mean, the whole idea of loading up the wagon and taking it to the neighbors, and you stop, people come out, how do you do? They take the baskets off, and of course your system is a lot more effective than that, but that was an individual doing that. And I think the way we drink water and waste food, we may need to start respecting our farmers a little more. I see those bumper stickers all the time, and I take them seriously. When the farmers go, you know, so goes the food. But at least you are putting all of that together, but the food bank, the farmers, those in need, it's just a marvelous system you have going. And that 40,000 volunteers each year, obviously a lot of people are moved to fill the need.
You know, that's just a matter, too, of creating a way for them to donate some of their time and effort for something important.
Yes.
There are so many people that are grateful to find a place where they can do it, and it's just off giving them the opportunity, and they already want to do it.
Excellent. Well, again, let's mention the website endhunger.org. We've been talking to the communications director of the Society of St. Andrew, Mike Hickox. And Mike is in Virginia, but the Society of St. Andrew is in many, many states and reaching into others as well, all over the country, to help people who need food. The Gleaning Network is just one of the programs they're going, and we need to hear from farmers as well as volunteers and those who wish to donate. And what else do we need, Mike, before we go?
Well, the website is the way for people to get connected if they're interested. And if they have questions, please go there and ask them any way that you want to get connected. If you're interested, give it a try. You know, you might not even be in an area that we work in. We'll try to help you get started with what you want to do.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike Hickox, for being on the show today. It's just been a real education and a wake-up call. I mean, all I knew we wasted food in restaurants and throw it out every night. But there's so many other ways that we can help with things that people toss away that actually are good surplus for others. So you are doing it, and my hat off to you and your entire organization. God bless you and all you do and all that's dear to you. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you for your interest.
My pleasure. You take care, and best to you.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. We live in a peculiar age when digital relationships can exist in and of themselves. In our digital world, with a touch of fantastical dishonesty, we can be whomever we want. Artistically talented, beautiful, alluring, the elemental bait that leads to human connection. But being who we are, why would one side in such a relationship not want to reach out and touch the other? Perhaps starting with just a little research to find out more about her? Uh-oh, maybe Digital Girl isn't real. And it is at just such a point that Catfish, a documentary about the perils of online relationshiping, becomes very interesting indeed. Nev Schulman, his brother Ariel, and friend Henry Joost are young digital entrepreneurs, never far from their cameras. As Nev's online Facebook relationship blossoms and then turns toward intrigue, the cameras keep rolling. Is anything real? Catfished was marketed as a mystery, but it is more than that. It is an important social commentary on our times. We are all figuring out how to live with social media, how it affects us and our interpersonal relationships. This one is funny, sad, and scary. It's an entertaining look into the human psyche bent by the world of today. A cautionary tale for the digital age. Catfish, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, here with my pets and pet peeves, hoping you'll join me in a wake-up cup of coffee. Anybody here seen my old friend America? Where's America? Filibuster or exceptional? Regaining sense of decency or starving children? It's not just a question for presidents and members of Congress. It's the question for we the people. America's right uses fake patriotism to cover up American realities with Oz ridicule and programmed phony court-packing talking points to camouflage Trans-Pacific Partnership's New World Order at the expense of a child's food for thought. We can't fully comprehend the depth of where a stop-and-frisk America descends without recapturing the essence of the greatest we have been. The correct questions give us insight and expose the true enemies of the people, while right answers give us Millionaires Club Congress on vacation from leadership. Do you know where your member of Congress spends one-third of the time he should be working for America? It's the questions we're asked that have been our education and character development. And I've never even really been one of those great classroom teachers who mold minds and now protect lives at school 5 days a week, year after year. But I have worked with ages 12 through 80, including a few household names. And while I remember very few of my answers, their questions return for haunting replays all the time, like gun violence. Where is America? It's in the questions of children denied food and in factual health care answers from organizations like the Jefferson Area Board of Aging, not in congressional wizardry disappearing food stamps while making Kansas jokes. Answering real questions is a real necessity for real people to keep it real and off the right direction from following the yellow brick road. 50 years after Dallas, I was asked, what's polio? Before answering, I realized after curing this crippling disease, the right direction for America has been political, educational, affordable, health care, and food stamp assassination. Anybody here seen my old friend, the America that didn't deny food to our children?
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.